indeed a joy for me to be here this evening. And before I talk about New Guinea, I want to say how much we appreciate getting to live in this apartment that you as a church have provided for us. It's been a real joy to be together as a family. We've been separated for about 2.5 years, all of us. Jerry came over about 2.5 years before we came home. And it was good to all be under one roof and get acquainted again. Even though I wasn't there very much of the time, when I was there, I enjoyed it. My wife enjoyed it all the time. We appreciate that apartment. And I'm sure that others who will be coming in and living in that apartment will enjoy it as much as we have. We appreciate so much the fellowship that we've had with you as a church and with you as individuals. The greatest thrill I get, I think, is being able to sit out there and enjoy the service. It's a lot different sitting out there than it is sitting up here. I enjoy getting the rare opportunities of sitting and just soaking up a little bit of God's blessing. It's been a real joy. Many have showed your kindnesses to us in many, many ways. And we appreciate so very much what you've done for us as a family. And we appreciate being part of this church who is concerned about others. You've showed that concern in many ways in your giving, your Thanksgiving offering, your Easter offering now, very close to $10,000, your alabaster giving, which is the building fund of missions. And we live in an alabaster home in New Guinea. That prayer and self-denial, your birthday offerings, all of these areas, you've showed your concern. And it's been a joy for us to be part of that congregation, part of a church who does show its concern. Missions pays. And I hope that you'll never forget it, that missions does pay. There was an old man in one of our churches, the Morongo Church. The men sit on, I've forgotten which side they sit on. The men sit on this side and the women on this side. I got it wrong. The women sit on this side and the men on this side. Been away from New Guinea too long. Anyway, there was an old man stood up in the back of the church one Sunday morning just as the pastor was getting ready to give the morning message. And he said, I want to testify. Well, in our churches here at home, when somebody is led of the Spirit to testify, you know, we appreciate that kind of freedom. We appreciate that. And somebody is bubbling over with a testimony, we want to hear it, don't we? Well, in New Guinea, we're kind of afraid. We kind of keep our fingers crossed. Well, the night before, if that old man had had a fight with his wife, he would want to tell people about it. And where could you find a better listening ear than a church service? There are a lot of people there. And he'd have a ready audience. So we kind of keep our fingers crossed when someone says, I want to testify in the middle of the service. But the old man stood on his feet and he was waiting for a response from the pastor. So the pastor finally said, all right, go ahead and testify. This old man is illiterate. If he's been to school, it was to carry some food or something to the schoolhouse. That's all he's ever known of the school. If you'd give him a book, he wouldn't know which was right side up or upside down. He wouldn't know if it was front or back. He's completely illiterate. And that old man, he had a testimony. It was only 20 minutes long. And there were four things, if I could count like the New Guineans do, there were four things that he wanted to say this morning. The first thing was, we have plenty of money, but we don't give to God. Now, I'm not going to expound on his points because this is not the message I want to tell you about. We have plenty of money, but we don't give to God. His second point was, some of us are Christians, but we're Christians in our mouth and not in the heart. Tremendous message for an old man that can't read and can't write. It met God someplace, that picture. His third point was, we as Christians are supposed to be an example to others. His fourth point, we work to be big in the eyes of our people. But only those with a clean heart are big in God's sight. Isn't that a tremendous message? Tremendous testimony for an old man that can't read and can't write. They think differently. They react differently. And I thought maybe I could share some of these differences with you, give you another angle, another insight into the people of New Guinea, the people that God has called us to work with. I told you, I showed you how they counted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 20, 30, and you could go on and count up as far as you want to go. When they want you to come, they say, come here. They want you to go, you go. I told motion for somebody to come the other day, and they just stood there and looked at me. I kind of got mixed up a little bit. We go up to a home and knock on the door. They don't in New Guinea. They come up and and they'll stand there and cough until you go to the door. That's their way of getting your attention. And if you don't go, they'll stand there and cough all morning until you come and answer the door. Our field chairman, Wallace White, said that he was 3 years in the beginning before he found out that not everyone had a cold. And at night, if we were going to their home in the bush and knock on their door, they'd probably make a new door on the other side of the house and get out, thinking that it's some of the spirits come, for they do fear the spirits. If we stand out there and cough, then they're not afraid. They know it's a human out there. But if we go and knock on the door, they think it's a spirit. They're just liable to make a new door in their house. Physically, these people are shorter than we are. They're very muscular, very strong, used to hard work, carrying heavy loads. And physically they are, they run circles around us, as white people. There are varying degrees of blackness in our New Guinea people. There are varying degrees of dress and undress. I just happened to have a sample of some of the clothing that people wear. I I asked him if he wanted to model these for us, and he said he didn't think so. This is what the ladies wear in the bush. Not much less than what they're wearing in some places here in the States. I think they were for a while. The dress or undress, this is what the men wear. They do wear this is wearing in the front side. On the back side, they pick a few leaves from the tanka tree. And that makes New Guinea the only country I know of where clothes grow on trees. They live cheaply there. Sorry about that. I carried these in a bag, which they carry everything in. Sweet potatoes, their babies, anything that has to be carried, they carry in these bags. They put the baby in the bag, put the bag on their head, and they have their arms free, do anything they want to. They get into church, the baby's still asleep, they hang it on a hook on the wall. Let the baby sleep. No sense in waking him up. They're worse than they are, our children are here, as far as making noise is concerned. Very handy things. They're different. And we find it very interesting to learn about these differences. Even though they may not wear too many clothes, they have a very strong code of modesty. It's not the kind of modesty that we think of here at home. But in their own setting, they are very modest people. As far as the personality of these people go, they're very friendly. They're very hospitable. And if they know they can help you, they'll help you. If they're walking down the road and eating a sweet potato, a cold sweet potato without sugar, brown sugar, without marshmallows, without salt, without butter, just a cold sweet potato, and they know that you're hungry, they'll give you a piece of their sweet potato. And I've seen time when it tasted good. You might try it sometime. But they're hospitable. And they want to share if they can, if they know that they can share. They're quick to express their pleasure. They're quick to express their anger. And when they really get angry with you, they turn their back and talk to you. And if they're really angry, they'll spit while they're talking. That's the ultimate way they can express their anger without taking a knife or an axe or bow and arrow or something. It's time to break off the conversation when they turn their back and start spitting. They're very curious people. Just as curious as the days are long. We ride motorbikes quite a bit in New Guinea. And I get my helmet on and my jacket and start out the door. And where are you going? Well, the first impression of me, you know, or with us, is it's none of your business where I'm going. But they're curious. And when they meet each other in the road, they say, where are you going? Where you been? What are you doing? Why? They're very curious. They want to know. And they'll tell them. It may be good or may be bad, but they'll usually tell them where they've been, what they're doing. They're different, very interesting. They're not a slave to the clock. Sometimes the missionary has a tendency to get an ulcer over this thing, this part of their culture, but they're not a slave to the clock. In fact, they don't have clocks. Very few of them could tell time if they did have it. These young people who've been in English school or in literacy school can tell time. But the majority of the people couldn't tell the time if they had a watch. We had a man working in our home. I was putting 10 or 12 hours a day in, and my wife was doing the same thing in the hospital. And we had to have some help at home, keeping the dishes washed and the clothes clean and ironing and all of these things. We were headed to the coast one day, and our domestic help said, get me a watch while you're down there at the coast. So we brought him a watch back when we came back. The next day he had it on upside down. I asked him what time it was, and he looked at it and he never could figure out what time it was, so he finally showed me the watch. It was on upside down. But he had a watch. They're not a slave to the clock. On Sunday morning it really creates a problem, especially if it's foggy. They haven't seen the sun yet. They don't know what time it is, and it's not time to go to church until they can see the sun. We can ring the bell for an hour, but they don't start for church until the sun shines. It's almost that bad in the States. When they can see the sun, they start for church. When we have prayer meetings in the bush, in their homes, we tell them we'll be there when it gets dark. Well, we go when it gets dark. And we may sit there for an hour, 2 hours, 2.5, 3 hours, waiting for the leaders, the Christian leaders of this particular tribe to come. We can't start until they get there. They may not be in any hurry. They may be home taking a nap. But we can't start until they get there. So we sit and wait. And here again, it's a conflict of cultures. But we have to get used to it because this is just the way they do it. They're very seldom in a hurry. The only time they hurry is when they're going to a fight or when they see a snake. Only two times I've seen them hurry. When they're speaking to you, they won't look you in the eye. They'll look off the other direction. You meet somebody on the road and shake hands with them, they look off the other direction when they shake hands with you. It was hard for us to get used to that, but that's just the way they do it. When they give a gift, watch out, that gift has streams. It took us several years to learn this, and it cost us a little bit before we finally learned it. Woodsick, a friend of ours, brought a duck to us one day. He says, "You've been a real good friend of ours. You've been here a long time. You've come to help us. I wanted to give you a present." Well, I thought that was very sweet of him. So we had duck that night. It had to be pressured to get it cooked good enough to eat it. It was so tough, but that's beside the point. We had duck. A week later, he came around and said, "Missionary, I want you to help me get a coffee machine." Now we, in New Guinea, we export something like 100,000 tons of coffee every year. And every man has a few coffee trees. Well, Woodsick had quite a few trees. And there's a little machine that they can get that has a handle on it. You turn this handle, put the coffee beans in the top. It spits the skins out one side and the coffee beans out the other. It shells the beans. And he wanted to get a coffee machine. So I went. Next time I went into town, I got a machine for him, and he paid me back all except $2.50, $2.75, something like that. One day I saw him on the street, on the road, and I said, "Woodsick, when are you going to finish paying off this coffee machine?" He said, "I gave you a duck, didn't I?" Well, he had already paid his bill. He had given me something in advance, and so he was expecting something in return. One of the pastor's wives brought some greens to us. They're no equivalent here in America. They're not spinach, they're not poke or any other kind of greens. They're different, but they're good. She said, "I picked too many greens, we can't eat them all. I thought maybe you'd like to have some." I thought that was real sweet of her. So we had greens. About an hour later, she came around and said, "I don't have any grease to put in my greens, or a shortening to put in them, or seasoning." Well, she had given us a gift. She expected the gift back. And she told us what kind of gift she wanted. Well, it took us a while to get used to this and learn this fact, this part of their culture. Now we can meet it head on. They bring us a gift. We grab a handful of bananas off the stalk that's hanging on the back veranda, or grab a pineapple that's laying there and give it back, give them the present back. And they come around after a while and say, "You owe me something." So we've learned their trick, learned how to deal with it. These people don't display affection in public. Hugging and kissing is repulsive to them. That's different too, isn't it? We won't dwell on that subject. You will see a boy and a girl walking down the road holding hands. But it means one thing. It means they're cousins, first cousins. That's it. First cousin, boy and a girl are allowed to hold hands. And that's all. Everything else is taboo as far as public demonstration. Well, these are just some of the differences of these people in New Guinea. If you were to go there, you'd see these and many, many others. They're different, completely different. Their logic is foreign to us. Their ways of thinking, their reasoning, it's all different. And if we want to help them, we have to begin to think and act like they do. Not always, not all the times. But there are certain limitations to this thing, but we have to learn how they think in order to be able to deal with them and to work with them and to get their confidence. But you know something? Their blood is red. They're human. God loves them, and Jesus died for them. And that's why we go to tell them the story of Jesus. That's why we want them to hear at least once the story that Jesus died for their sins, and that they too can have peace and joy in their hearts instead of fear. I'm reminded of a couple of verses in Romans. I've talked, now I'm ready to preach. Paul said in Romans, "Whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved." Isn't that a thrilling promise? Isn't that thrilling? Whoever calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. Didn't say you had to be white or black or literate or illiterate or sick or healthy or rich or poor. Whoever calls upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. But the next verse says, "How shall they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how shall they believe in him of whom they have not heard? And how shall they hear without a preacher? And how shall they preach except they be sent?" Four very important questions that have to go along with this promise. How can they call on him if they haven't believed? And how can they believe if they haven't heard? And how can they hear? And if someone has gone to tell them the story of Jesus. I'd like to take the liberty of adding two more questions to this list of four that Paul has given to us. One question, how shall they go if there's no money to go? And I think you as a church have done your share in sending, providing the money that others could go. But the other question is, if there are unlimited funds and we don't have young people who are willing to go, what happens then? One of our greatest needs, we have two big needs in New Guinea all the time, ever since we've been there, 11 years. These two things have been pressing needs. One, finance. Two, lack of personnel. Laborers. Yes, the fields are white in the beginning. The fields are white. And we have quite a few missionaries. But we don't have near enough to do what we feel God needs done, wants us to do, and what we feel should be done. We just opened up a new work on the coast. We've waited for about 5 years for a missionary to be able to go and start the work. And finally, we had to send a national pastor there to start the work. And this thing is mushroomed even more than we ever expected. They put us on a spot now because we're going to have to build a church that's grown so fast. But we'll come back to this question. Laborers. We need help. And it isn't just in New Guinea, it's in all the fields. And what a wonderful opportunity for you as young people to present yourself to God and say, "Lord, I'm ready to do what you want me to do." Many of you have done that. Many of you have already committed yourself and dedicated yourself to God and said, "Lord, I'll do what you want me to do. I'll go where you want me to go. I'll say what you want me to say. I'll be what you want me to be." I wonder tonight, how many of you young people here this evening would like to make that act of dedication tonight? The laborers are few in all of our fields, not just in New Guinea, but every mission field has the same cry every year. We need more help. We need more help. And if all the money in the world is available, but we don't have young people who are willing to offer themselves as a living sacrifice, what good does the money do? How many of you young people here this evening would just get up out of your seat and come down here and kneel at the altar in a prayer of dedication, offering yourself to God? If he wants you to go to the mission field, you'll go to the mission field. If he wants you to stay at home, you'll stay at home. If he wants, whatever he wants you to do, you'd be willing to do what he wants you to do. I'd like for our organist to play number 343, please. And while she's playing, how many of you would just get up out of your seat and come down here and meet me at the altar for a prayer of dedication? I'm not calling you to the mission field. No, I'm calling you to give yourself to God to do what God wants you to do with your life. I'm sure of a congregation of this size and many college students.